School hasn't even started back, and right after that, it's holiday parties. So, what to do? Cold hors d'oeuvres are impressive, but isn't that a lot of work? Well, like anything classical French, it can be, but it doesn't have to be. I'll wager you've made and served some very acceptable classical hors d'oeuvre and didn't even know it. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 203.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Culinary Libertarian, welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. It's chapter 4 of the Escoffier series today. It's actually chapter 4, part 1. Hors d'oeuvre is the chapter, and this is the cold portion of the course, so to speak. So, there's going to be a spelling test at the end of the show, no there isn't, for hors d'oeuvre, because it's really hard to spell, it's hard to type. Just as a side, to placate the language police of the French language, hors d'oeuvre is already plural, there's no S at the end, and I made that comment on the Facebook, and someone commented back that, well, yes, but the English version of the French requires an S, and I laughed. Oh, well, really, English French, well, that's funny. So, I'm sticking to my guns and saying hors d'oeuvre anywhere on the planet in print is already plural. So, foreign grammar aside, hors d'oeuvre are, as mentioned, both hot or cold. They are intended to be small bites. If you've been to a mildly fancy restaurant, perhaps you've seen served a small plate almost immediately upon sitting. That's called the amuse or amuse-bouche. Happy mouth is what it means, and it's intended to whet your appetite. It's also a time and a place for the chef or the cook making them to really shine, to show off some flavor combinations, some cooking skill, and some visual and culinary taste artistry. We'll get on that maybe a little bit more on that later. While the phrase hors d'oeuvre may be infrequently used, small one or two bite assortments of food are still very much made and still very much served and eaten. Deviled eggs and flavored cheese spreads on crackers or on cucumber rounds, pickles and olive trays and smoked salmon are all acceptable and, as it happens, are included as hors d'oeuvre in La Guide Culinaire. Yippee! So, despite what Uncle Theo does at the Christmas party, hors d'oeuvre are not intended to be the whole meal. Scott Fair writes, quote, "They should be composed of light items of a delicate nature, and they should not constitute a complete dish in themselves. But if these items are any less in terms of quantity, they should be compensated for this by being of an excellent taste and by giving careful attention to presentation. Both of these should be above reproach." End quote. Escoffier had some rules for the service of hors d'oeuvre, noting particularly that they should not be served in a meal which includes soup, owing that the flavors of the hors d'oeuvre may cloud the palate, making the delicacy of the soup more difficult to detect and enjoy. That is, of course, a salient point, but not a firm rule. Compatibility is the watchword for menu planning. In the introduction to this chapter, Escoffier takes a few paragraphs of diversion to lament the then-current trend toward a Russian tradition of putting hors d'oeuvre on a sideboard before dinner. Now, because they're Russians, they also have adult beverages. The assembly of these foods is called zakuski. He's none too pleased about that trend, and I'll have more on that in the chef's notes portion of the show. The principal objection seems to be the variety of foods contrasts too much with dinner and muddies the palates of the guests. And that's a fair point. Scoffier does have strong feelings that, quote, fish of all types and in all forms, salads and marinated vegetables, should be rigorously excluded from dinner menus. On the contrary, however, the use of cold hors d'oeuvre is traditional for luncheon menus where they are not only necessary, but indispensable, end quote. Hors d'oeuvre in Escoffier's time became a very important aspect to dinner service. He writes that they were so important and of such variety and impression that the cook had an entire room, cooks had an entire room for themselves just for creation of hors d'oeuvre. One more quote, a tad long, but makes the case well. Quote, it should be stated that a good hors d'oeuvre cook is a most capable member of the kitchen staff. This area, although of secondary importance, requires qualities seldom met with together. A sure and fine sense of taste, a creative ability, an artistic touch, and professional knowledge. The hors d'oeuvre cook should be able to produce first-class, well-presented items from very little. It is the quality of his produce, of his product, rather than the nature of the commodities he uses, which defines the value of his work, end quote. Yeah, no pressure, right? I quip, but there's a valuable point here. Hors d'oeuvre needn't be slices of beef tenderloin with truffle mousseline and caviar. From my days of teaching culinary school, those are the kinds of ideas the students would come up with when pressed for hors d'oeuvre ideas. It had to be of incredible expense. Well, not necessary. Some of the other ideas were blanching a snow pea, separate the whole into the two halves, and wrap shrimp in one half of the snow pea, skewer it, and grill it. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot! No! Well, if not grilled over-manipulated shrimp, what is a good hors d'oeuvre? Anchovy fillets. Quote, cut the fillets into thin strips, marinate in a little oil, and arrange them in a ravier, a small dish, either trellis fashion or in straight lines. Decorate according to taste with white and yolk of hard-boiled egg, chopped parsley and capers, and sprinkle lightly with oil. The fillets can also be dressed on a layer of finely shredded lettuce, end quote. Now that's not beef tenderloin with capers and foie gras or caviar. I pick that as a good example of a rather simple dish. Nothing fancy about anchovies and chopped eggs. Fish is a good item to use as it comes in many forms, including smoked, just not for dinner. That's a rule we can dispense with. Keeping in mind the needs of the cook to be clever, a can of smoked oysters can be good hors d'oeuvre. And yes, even in the book, Escoffier has a few things he calls them tinned. Well, he didn't in French, but the translator does. It's okay. So these smoked oysters may be on a cucumber round or on a cracker with some horseradish sour cream and chopped chives. It's simple. It's pretty, it's bite-sized, and it's easy. In the smoked fish area, there's smoked salmon, smoked eel, smoked whitefish, especially in Michigan, especially in Leland, Michigan. Oh, man. Smoked trout or mullet or mussels or clams, I think you see where I'm going with this. Those can be left as slices, as in the case of the smoked salmon, rolled into cute coronets or shaped into small roses, a presentation of chopped white and yolk of egg kept separate, capers, scallions or chives, well brunoised red onion, and some cornichons and black bread or bellinis, which are buckwheat pancakes, and I think they're better than oté, and that makes a fine hors d'oeuvre. It's actually could be a dinner by itself, which becomes it so big. It's, you know, a smoked salmon service or a caviar service, which we're not going to get into with this one. But man, oh man, caviar service is fun. Before I go away from fish, caviar is a nice hors d'oeuvre. Yes, I'm going to bring it up a little bit. I don't mind the good stuff. And the good stuff is plenty spendy, and that's Sevruga, etc. And, well, you who know are going to yell at the radio. I'm sorry, I don't remember the other one. But in your grocery store or in your frou-frou, highfalutin, fancy pants, new-aged, healthy grocery store, you might see somewhere these little jars of lump fish caviar, as black as can be, Spinal Tap, or as neon red as is possible. Yeah, technically it's caviar because it's fish eggs, but I wouldn't eat it by itself. It might be a good garnish on top of something, but I don't find it acceptable for caviar service at all. I read a minute ago that Escoffier advised against marinated vegetables at dinner, but as a category, marinated vegetables is massive. The color and flavor combinations are nearly endless. Think of the colors available just from carrots, celery, celery root, beets, red and white onions, artichokes, red and white pearl onions, kind of the same thing, cauliflower, and then the color of saffron or turmeric. It's pretty fun just thinking about all of the color combinations that are possible. A once popular kind of quick pickle, and almost all of Escoffier's hors d'oeuvre pickled veg are quick pickles. Quick is kind of a funny term to use here. But what that means is a distinction between being canned and put up. That dish is called artichokes a la Grec. It sounds intimidating because you don't know who Grec was, but it's pretty easy. It takes a little time, but it's not hard. The recipe is best with small artichokes before the choke part forms, and finding those can be a challenge, certainly this time of the year. But there's no reason not to use the hearts of large artichokes, which are very available. Just clean them well and leave only the heart part and maybe a wee portion of the stem, making sure to tend that all that tough outside support is cut away. And that if you look at the cross section of an artichoke stem, there's this little white part in the middle, and then around that, it has the same sort of image of celery. When you cut celery in half cross-section, you see the celery and then you see these little strands of threads, strings they call them. Well, artichoke has the same thing. All that will not, you can cook that for a month, it won't go away. Peel that stuff off with a sharp knife, don't cut your fingers, and then the part in the middle, that's fine. That's tender. That has artichoke flavor. It's tasty. The stringy stuff on the outside is, you know, save it for soup or something else, but not for this quick pickle. So here we go. These large artichokes blanch that once they're cleaned, blanch them in salted water, then shock them in ice water, stops the cooking. Make a marinade of a quart of water, 2/3 of a cup of olive oil, the juice of 3 lemons, 2 teaspoons of salt, 1/4 of a cup of both celery and fennel, the vegetable, not the seeds, 1 teaspoon of coriander seeds, and 1 teaspoon of black peppercorns, 1 sprig of fresh thyme, and 3 bay leaves. Bring all that stuff to a boil, simmer for 5 minutes to get the perfume up, then add the artichokes, poach them until they are skewer tender. And if you have small chokes or you've cut your artichoke hearts into half or quarters, they're going to cook fairly quickly, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. It's going to, you know, you have to check it. They depend. There's a lot of factors I can't know. But as soon as they are skewer tender, take the pot off the stove and let everything cool in the pot. Leave the artichokes in there because as they cool, they're going to draw in the flavor of that quick pickle. So, such a procedure might work with canned artichokes, which are going to be easier to find. And part of the thing that's cool about them is they're smaller to begin with. So the big change here would be instead of cooking them, since they're already cooked, clean the artichokes. The choke part's probably gone or is cooked so much that it doesn't really matter. But I've found that there's always one or two tough outer leaves that they manage to leave on. Take that off. That's not going to get, it's been cooked in the can. It's not going to get more tender cooking for 10 more minutes in your pot. So throw that part away. If they're already cut into quarters, that's fine. If they're whole, cut them into quarters. The big change here is you're going to leave the chokes on the, you're going to set them aside, bring all of that marinade to a boil, simmer to get the perfume up, then take that off the heat, add those cooked chokes into that hot marinade, and let them all cool together. And they'll absorb some of that liquid. The heat and the flavor going in will push out some of the oil if they were preserved in oil. If they're preserved in water, it might be a little bit easier. But it's a way to get there. It's a possibility versus having no possibility at all. Other examples of quick pickles include red cabbage. Although the 6 hours he recommends doesn't seem quick, think today for tomorrow. Cucumbers salted and left to stand for 30 minutes to remove the excess water inside, then tossed to coat in a bowl with just enough oil and vinegar to kind of cover them. Add some chopped chervil. Now, chervil is a magnificent flavor herb. It tastes like refined mix of tarragon with a back note of chive, and it's very delicate licorice. The chiviness doesn't come through as onion; it comes through as a little bit of a piquant. And you may not agree with me that you get the chive, and that's fine. But the key flavor is a light, very light licorice-ness, which is it's adorable. But it's getting late in the year, and it's kind of fussy about where it grows. Dried is worthless. Don't buy it. There's no point. If you can't get fresh chervil, and you probably can't, chives are fine. Dill is fine. Carrot tops look fun, but they don't have a lot of flavor. There aren't two scallions possibly, but it gets kind of potent. There aren't too many places to go for a light, unobtrusive flavor. And so chives and dill might be about it that's easy to find. And that might be a bit about it and what's hard to find. Cauliflower, blanched to nearly done, and placed to cool in a pickle jar. So if you've got leftover, especially pickles you really like, it doesn't matter what they are, bread and butter pickles, hamburger dills, kosher dills, save the juice. The same idea is going to work. Take the cauliflower, blanch to nearly done, put it into the pickle jar while it's hot, and let it cool in that juice. It's going to absorb some of that flavor. You can also make a marinade of your own choice. Add fresh turmeric root to it so you get some good color to it. Add saffron if you've got saffron to get some even more color to it. Fresh turmeric is going to add both the color, that really beautiful orange, and that turmeric flavor, which I find actually a bonus. So the whole technique of taking a vegetable, a broad category. Mushrooms, yes, I know mushrooms are fungus. Blanching pearl onions, red pearl onions, cauliflower. Green wouldn't really work. We're doing it with artichokes because that's different, but think broccoli probably is going to work well. Green pickled green beans is a thing. I'm not a fan, but it's a thing. Anything that you can par cook or mostly cook and put it into a pickle juice that you like, it's a great way to make a quick pickle of the thing. And you can also do it with cucumbers. Yeah, you can cook cucumbers. I know that sounds crazy, but you can. There's a whole category of that called Doria, which is a kind of a, that's a soup and other stuff. We'll get to that. Maybe we'll talk about it. Maybe we won't. So it's not impressive, but it's curious. And the other one to do is celery root. Now, two examples the Escoffier lists for vegetable salads are beetroot and celeriac, or celery root. Celery root is in most grocery stores, at least the ones I've been to, and it's in maybe in that sort of weird area with all the other sort of organic or esoteric new age foods that are thousands of years old. It's generally round and it looks kind of fuzzy because it's roundish and kind of fuzzy, especially on the bottom where it can have divots and indentations and maybe long root things growing out of it. And on the top, it might have what looks like celery stalks growing. Now, celeriac is not actually the root from which celery grows. They're two different plants. They just happen to look and taste alike. Now, that celery root in the store, even on the ground, might produce some celery-looking stalks of size enough that you could cook with them or eat them. And you can. Just know that it is far more potent in celery flavor than the celery you buy at Thanksgiving for Granny's dressing. It's impressive. It tastes good, but you have to be ready for it. Otherwise, it can be an unpleasant surprise, and we want to avoid unpleasant surprises. The celery root does need to be peeled, and it is pretty hard. Think like parsnip or even like rutabaga. Turnips are not too hard. Rutabaga is harder. Celery root's pretty hard, so you have to be careful cutting it. Cut it in half once, carefully, and then put the flat side down, and then do your cutting so it's at least got a flat surface for resting on. If you have a mandolin, be careful. Slice it thin. Cut it into juliennes, for example. You can cut it into batonettes, thinner sticks. You can cut it into fatter sticks. You can do what you want to. But thin is good, and you make a nice slaw out of that. You can either pickle it, like we just talked about, make a nice slaw of that with a little bit of lemon juice, salt, pepper, a little bit of mayonnaise, and let that sit overnight. And that's fine. It can also be sauteed as a vegetable. So you can boil it and mash it, saute the juliennes, a little bit of butter, some salt and pepper. It's actually very tasty. It's also extraordinarily old world European, and someone's going to love you for making it. For our chapter here, as an hors d'oeuvre, the celery root cut into juliennes and in that mayonnaise, or you can make a whole grain mustard vinaigrette and toss that. A little bit of thyme, fresh thyme leaves would be good. In that mustard vinaigrette, some fennel fronds would be good. Fennel fronds would also be very good before with the, where did it go? Lost my spot. Oh, what was I talking about? Where the chervil and the chives. Anyway. Oh, the cucumbers. Yeah, fennel fronds and cucumbers would be really good. I'm surprised I didn't think of that before. Whole grain mustard vinaigrette, a mustard mayonnaise, plain mayonnaise, Dijon mayonnaise, because the mustard flavor is going to complement the celery root. And overnight, so that it all has a chance to wilt and flavor develop, that's a good thing. An interruption to mention something about service. Been talking a lot recently about these salads. So you're thinking about 3-inch long julienne of a vegetable sitting in this dressing, and then we're serving it into this little dish, and that's an hors d'oeuvre. How? Does it make sense? It's easy to think that the hors d'oeuvre, especially when you think about like a canapé, is supposed to be dainty for evening dress clad females and tuxedo clad. Well, I guess the women can wear tuxedos too. What the hell? The men can wear evening gowns. Who cares? But anyway, it's nice clothes. We don't think about sloppy, unkempt, difficult to manage food as an hors d'oeuvre for a fancy event. Well, there is a solution. Make it elegant. Food cups. Baby artichokes are poached and cooled mushroom caps, cucumber slices a little bit thicker than normal, and scoop out like maybe half of the seed pack, so it's a little bit of a cup. Belgian endive leaves make fantastic little holders for things, and they look neat. Cherry tomatoes with the tops sliced off and the seed packs pulled out, and save the seeds for tomato seed vinaigrette. And you might also need to slice the bottom off of the tomato so they don't roll around like marbles. Large olives, usually green of the bigger ones, can be stuffed with all kinds of things, and you can buy them already stuffed with all kinds of things. Almonds or pimentos or blue cheese or anchovies or combinations of those things. We can also take those unruly julienne of marinated celery root pieces. Now chop them up, put them into a mushroom cap, into a Belgian endive leaf. So now it's dainty. You still have the flavors, but you don't have celery sticks coming out of your mouth. That would probably be unkind. If you're interested in an even more refined look, cut the celery small in the first place. Cut your beetroot small in the first place. I'm going to get to that in 1 second. So a small dice of that celery root. If it's really big, possibly blanch it. So one of my goals on this episode is to take away the 75 steps that everyone is certain exists for classical French food at all levels. It's possible to go through all those steps. The entire purpose of any of those things is the guest's perception of how easy is it to eat and how great does it taste. So a medium-sized dice, think quarter-inch cubed, is not going to marinate particularly well overnight. If you blanched it for 5 minutes in boiling salted water, took it out, and then put it into your salad dressing, your mustard vinaigrette, your mustard mayonnaise, whatever you've got, toss that, put that in the cooler. Now it's going to develop the flavor, and the celery root will at least be chewable. That's important. You can do even smaller dice if you want to, but that becomes more tedious knife work. Then those things can go into a celery, a decent-sized mushroom cap, into a Belgian endive leaf, onto a cracker. There's lots of other ways to do that if you want to take an extra step. If you like the idea of cold cooked beets in a dill sour cream or a mustard mayonnaise, one good tip Escoffier gives is to bake the beet with the skin on. You can wrap it in foil. You can actually wrap it in foil with a couple of sprigs of thyme or oregano or marjoram or whatever herb you like, probably even dill. And the steaming of that as it bakes will impart some of that flavor into the root. And let it bake till it's soft. Cool it. And then when it's cold, like next day, The skin should peel off pretty easily. And now you have this easy to work with, fully cooked meat that has all of its color. One of the things that happens a little bit with beets when you boil them is some of that color comes out. So leave the color in the beet, leave the flavor in the beet, and bake them first. And now you have this thing you can work with. It's very nice for all kinds of salad things to do. So far, hors d'oeuvres have been standalone dishes, or prettified by making them individual servings by using cups and things. There's another option which opens more doors: baked stuff, crackers, or canapés, sometimes called toast points. You can also have small potichou puffs. Big potichou puffs are called long johns or profiteroles. Almost anything you can fill your small potichou puffs. You can top your canapés or your crackers with nearly anything that can be piped. And most impressive for a presentation is a barquette, which is a pastry that looks a little bit like a pastry canoe. They can be really tiny, from an inch and a half up to probably 4 or more inches, which becomes no longer bite-sized. It becomes big. That's a bit of work. Between the rolling the pastry, you need for every one barquette you make, you need 2 of the metal dishes, because you're going to roll the dough, cut it to the shape, put it on the barquette mold, put another barquette mold on top, because you're baking it upside down. And then bake all of them. And I'm not going into that at all. You can find out how to do that on your own, either in your copy of Le Guide Culinaire. I'm sure Martha's got something about it. I'm sure there are 75 other people who've covered it well. They look pretty. They look really pretty. I'm going to cover a little bit about what he says to do for a service, but I'm not going to get into how to make them. One of the things about the barquette is they, as a service item, represent the amount of fussy someone would expect from a dish out of classical French service. It's the exact opposite of the fussy required for that julienne celery root salad. Scoffier gives this example of what can, and he means ought, to be done with a barquette. Quote, "Garnish the bottom of a barquette or tartlet case with a layer of mousse of prawn or crayfish or salmon, and on top place a nice white poached oyster or a round slice of hard boiled egg cut with a fancy cutter. Decorate the center with a little lobster coral or a diamond-shaped piece of filet of sole, decorated with a leaf of chervil and coat with jelly to the level of the side of the case. Obviously, it is possible with taste and inventiveness to create a considerable variety of this type of hors d'oeuvre, many more than it is possible to indicate here," end quote. And boy, howdy, there are, not only does it have to be a mousse of a thing, you can make a cream cheese of pureed caramelized onions, or pureed any vegetable you like. Pureed beets would be pretty. The obnoxious part is that a single barquette can end up taking 25 minutes to make. Just because of all the things you have to do. Obviously, you don't poach oysters one at a time. You do all these things ahead of time. But still, there's the production part. Do it if you want to. I'm not saying not to do it. I'm just saying I'm trying to find the ways to make this doable so you can still be the hostess or the host. Right? The thing I think he means when he says fill with jelly is just to do like a gelatin. So you got to make a clear gelatin. That's a lot of work. Let's start with the easy part. Canapés. Crackers come in dozens of varieties and can be purchased, but they can also be made. Making your own is a tad bit more work, but I think they are worth the effort, but you are not required to. If you're using baguettes for canapés, toast points, which oddly enough rarely have points, those slices are toasted. Now, a sheet pan at a time is easiest for quantity. The pieces of bread can be baked as they are. You can brush both sides with olive oil, or you can brush both sides with clarified butter. Escoffier is mentioning that if you want to make these toast points, you can fry them on the stovetop in clarified butter, which is tedious and absolutely delicious, but you got to watch all of them, and they're not all going to cook at the exact same time. As to the garnish, Escoffier offers this, quote, as a general rule, the garnish for a canapé should consist of only one main item. But without destroying this principle, a combination of various items is acceptable, provided that the flavors and presentation are in harmony. It is recommended that the toasts be well buttered whilst hot, so as to keep it soft, end quote. That's right. Butter the toasts that were fried in butter. A few examples of what he means. I'll add that Escoffier recommended a shape for each canapé, most likely for aesthetics. I think that's an option we can omit, but I appreciate the visual variety. The shapes were round, crescent, square, diamond, plain oval, and fancy oval. Fluted is the only thing that comes to mind referring to a fancy oval. Anchovy canapé reads, to lightly coat the toasts with anchovy butter and pipe a border around the edge of the same butter. In the center, arrange anchovy fillets in a trellis fashion and decorate with chopped, hard-cooked egg white. Here's another one, shrimp canapés. Coat the toasts with very pink shrimp butter and pipe borders around with the same butter. Fill the center with a rose pattern made from shrimp and capers in the middle. Honestly, I don't know how to make a rose shape out of shrimp. It sounds pretty. But the intent here for service seems plain. Flavored butter and a complimentary thing on top and a suitable garnish. One other one he mentions is a smoked salmon canapé on black bread, horseradish butter, and smoked salmon, marinated herring, and caviar placed in lines on top of the black bread and then cut with an oval cutter. Now, what he's talking about, instead of a like square sandwich piece of black bread, think cutting it the long way. So you have this huge slab of bread, like instead of sandwich cut, long ways cut. You have all this horseradish butter on there, then these lines of orange for the salmon, white for the, herring, and then the caviar. So you've got orange, white, black. Then you cut it out. So with this very clean edge, it's a very sharp-looking canapé. And, you know, leftovers are snack. That's a fair amount of effort. It's not worth not doing. Boy, that was weird. It's worth doing. But just an idea. It sounds like a bit of work, all these things, and the fussiness can be avoided while still making a fine hors d'oeuvre. Thinking about the process, but with something we might have on hand, toasted pecan butter and sliced smoked chicken breast, roasted red bell pepper butter and andouille sausage juliennes on a really fine toast point. He didn't mention them. Those are flavor combinations that would work. Maybe for you, it's toasted walnut butter or I don't think cashews and smoked salmon go together well, but you get the idea. It doesn't have to be smoked salmon. Maybe it's poached salmon. I mean, chicken, not salmon. Or that too. Who knows? But there's things you have that you need to use up that can become repurposed for hors d'oeuvre. Now, let's turn to what you might have seen and maybe made and perhaps didn't even realize you were making hors d'oeuvre. Olives and pickle trays. No kidding. Slices of cantaloupe melon and mulberries are also classical French hors d'oeuvre. For the melon, serve very ripe on crushed ice, and the mulberries should be large, very ripe, and arranged on vine leaves. That's it. That's actually a procedure in the book. Well, that's not hard. Anybody can do that. I'm not trivializing hors d'oeuvre, because there's a lot of effort for some of these things, but I am pointing out that something at the peak of flavor, cantaloupes, tomatoes, mulberries, raspberries, here in 2 or 3 weeks, oh my gosh, the blackberries. So, I mean, blackberries everywhere. Something at the peak of flavor is perfect. Serve as is, because nothing else needs to be done to it. Just eat it and enjoy. Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
One other item. More probably, one other item today that qualifies as a cold hors d'oeuvre, and you're going to love this one, is deviled eggs. I've mentioned it a couple times, but absolutely, deviled eggs are hors d'oeuvre. Go nuts, because it works. Plain and simple, the traditional way, or add bacon, or chopped caramelized onions, or some of that celery root salad, or as Escoffier writes, quote, "The most important need for their preparation is inventiveness and artistry, and even a simple but well-thought-out idea can be worthy of a more grandiose title," end quote. So, come up with something that hasn't been done before and call it something amazing. This might be a place for some of that lumpfish caviar, or put in cut-up chicken livers, or smoked salmon, or bits of sausage, or whatever you had, well, maybe not whatever, but something you had last night. This is a good way to change flavors and use up some stuff. This episode is to give you some ideas of what can be done, what's possible, and there's just, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by possibilities. But there's a lot that can be done. So start small. Make flavored butters and flavored cream cheese. It's easy to do. It can be fussy. You can take all this stuff and then pass it through a very, very fine mesh screen, especially to say like anchovies, if there's still bones or there's something you like seeds. Maybe you made a mulberry cream cheese and it's got the seeds. Yeah, I don't really want the seeds. You can get them out. It's another step, but you can do it. You don't have to make it fussy. It's possible. Puree the thing. Shrimp, I know it's spendy. Canned pimentos, those mulberries, the blackberries. Put it in a food processor. Add some butter or some cream cheese or both. A little bit of lemon juice. Acid brings out the flavor of things. A little bit of salt if it's appropriate to the flavor, a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, salt and pepper, and it's done. The same process, for cream cheese, I mentioned that. You can also do a smoked salmon cream cheese and then add chives and pipe that into those little mini pot of shoe puffs. You can pipe it into the Belgian endive leaves onto crackers, onto toast points. Just because he said cover it in butter and make a garnish with butter. Yeah, but you don't have to. You could. It's your party. Just like with cooking, start with what you know. Deviled eggs is something you can do well. Branch out from there. The skills from cooking are transferable to hors d'oeuvre, and you can grow your repertoire very quickly. I do want to comment a minute about types of vinegars and oils if you are going to do quick pickles or going to marinate things. For the most part, because we're looking for, we want flavor to shine, so we want the things we're going to use as marinade to be subdued and support flavors, support characters in the background. So balsamic vinegar is simply too strong. It's brute. He's a menace. Tarragon vinegar, yeah, probably the same thing. Too forceful. Rice wine vinegar or champagne vinegar, those are much better choices because they are less acidic, they're less assertive, and they let the flavor of the thing come through. Now, if you're a sushi fan, you probably already know that sushi rice gets a little bit of rice wine vinegar to it. And if you really shouldn't taste the acid, it's just there to help bring out the flavor of the rice. That's why it's a good choice for hors d'oeuvre and for these marinades and these quick pickles, so the thing that's being marinated or pickled shines through, not the flavor of the acid you're using. Extra virgin olive oil, except in the case of those artichokes, is, for me, mostly too strong. Now, peanut oil is a possible choice if you can eat peanuts. For flavor and the applications here, avocado oil or particular nut oils, hazelnut, almond, walnut, macadamia nut, things I think are things that are, well, relatively available, but they have an issue of short shelf life. They can be useful, but they are potent. Use them sparingly. And so if you're a fan of the show, if you've listened to this show at all, you've probably heard me go off on seed oils. Avoid them. Those so-called vegetables oils, with the exception of olive oil, I don't buy them. And the big heavy hitters are canola oil and safflower oil and sunflower oil, anything called vegetable oil. No, don't do that. Those seed oils are worth avoiding, so please do that. Now I'm going to make a few... Oh, wait a minute, you just said don't do that. Okay, pumpkin seed oil is a spectacular green color, and it has a very impressive flavor. Never use it for cooking. It's only used in dressings and only in very small quantities, and you're not eating this every day. I don't recommend, I don't advise going and buying containers full of any of those seed oils, but for garnishment, pumpkin seed oil, I make an exception for. I also make an exception for sesame seed oil. Yes, it's a seed, but it's so potent that just a little bit goes a long way, especially in your hot stir-fried dishes. Refrigerate them once they're open, so you extend the shelf life. They go rancid quickly. So that's going to be the part about oils. I'm going to end there because it's a whole other show. This has been basically a primer. Frankly, you can spend the rest of your life creating amazing combinations and inventing clever ways to serve hors d'oeuvre, and you should do that. I'm happy to discuss cold hors d'oeuvre if you have questions. Head over to the Culinary Libertarian Facebook page or the Twitter page. Both of those can be found on the culinarylibertarian.com/support and drop me a post. Ask me a question. Follow me along. The next Escafé episode will be hot hors d'oeuvre, and I don't have a date set for that, but it's possible mid-September should open up for part two of this, and all that will be in time for holiday parties. So I mentioned social media. It seems to me that Telegram is becoming a thing. And it becomes seems to be really be useful as a group. And so I am in a few groups, and it seems a little bit easier to navigate than, say, Facebook or Twitter, because there isn't too much intrusion. There's some, but that's going to happen, I guess. Does Telegram hold value to you as a platform? And would there be any value to you in a culinary libertarian Telegram page? I've been thinking about it. I just don't know. So if you have an answer, one way or the other, let me know. All right, folks, that's going to do it. If you are looking for some one-pot meals you can make to serve before your hors d'oeuvre of pickled veg, check out my cookbook, Cooking for Comfort, One-Pot Meals You Can Make. It's available on Amazon, or you can visit my blog page to see some of the photos readers have sent me and to download the introduction to get an idea of how my writing food relates to you. Visit culinarylibertarian.com/cookingforcomfort. To check it out, and you can also use the Amazon link from that blog page. I'll add a link to the episode, add a link on the show notes page to episode 54, which is about pickles and pickling. It's a good support show content for this one, and it's also getting to be that time of the year to be thinking about putting up the garden bounty. Please share this on your social media feeds. Also, please rate and review the show on your favorite podcatcher. Thank you for your help, and thank you for being here. I appreciate you listening. Thanks also to my Patreon supporters. I'll do a chef's table portion for this with a bit more into the zakuskis and a bit deeper, a little bit into some hors d'oeuvre, cold hors d'oeuvre. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.